So I welcome all of you to Wednesday Sutta discussion session. Actually, for some of you, it is Tuesday night. And we were discussing several suttas here in order to get some insights from the Buddha's teaching, especially to our practice. Therefore, we are trying to get some selectively, we are taking certain suttas so that we can get various insights to our practice. So far we have discussed Sabbasava Sutta and Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, which are more relevant to our practice, and now we are discussing another sutta from Majjhima Nikaya. Actually, all three suttas so far we were discussing are from Majjhima Nikaya. And now in this sutta, Mula Pariyaya Sutta, Buddha was residing at Ukkatha. That was the city name, and the place is called Subhaga. It's a kind of garden or a forest named as Subhaga. And at that time, Buddha himself is taking the title or the sort of a topic to discuss, and then directly tell monks that he is going to discuss about the arising of everything, or the root of everything, and he is requesting others to listen carefully. And now this is how it is starting. And if we analyze the sutta, this contains, the whole sutta is somewhat organized around 24 concepts. So these 24 concepts are, we can say, very much like samples from the whole universe. For the whole experience, we'll say the human experience, within the whole human experience applied to the whole universe, Buddha has taken certain samples. So by analyzing these, we can say, we can attribute it to something else as well. So they are very much like, through the inferential knowledge, we can think what was the Buddha's view, or the proper view to another thing which is not in the list, but fairly comparable to the one or two items available in the list. So we've discussed, just to summarize, there are four items which are somewhat used to us. Those are the four elements: earth, water, fire and air. And that basically represents the whole physical aspect of the whole universe. And then in general, it is mentioned about beings. There we can say hell realms and the human realms. So whoever the beings they are, we can include to this category. And then gods, there are various celestial beings are available in the six celestial realms. So last time we discussed about that universal view of the Dhamma, kind of a universal view is presented in the Dhamma, that also we have discussed. And so the gods include those six celestial beings, six types of celestial beings available in all these six celestial realms. And then Pajapati is the creator gods of the Brahmanism. So there we can say, we can include whoever is the God, people are believing, thinking that he is the universal God, he is the creator God. So there we can include, we can categorize here. And then Brahma, so that represents the whole realm of the Brahmas, that is 16 Rupavachara Brahma realms, that is the 16 material Brahma realms we can generally consider. And then actually there are several levels included here, depending on the level of their achievement, level of their attainment. So when Brahma is considered, it is mentioned for the first Jhana level Brahma realms, and then Abhasara represent the second Jhana level Brahma realms, and the third Jhana level Brahma realms are mentioned through Subhakinha. And then Vehappala comes as the fourth jhana level, and then Abhibhu comes under the overlord. So that is also somewhat relevant to the fourth jhana level. And we can have a little doubt here. Probably it could be Abhiha, not Abhibhu. But anyway, it is representing the realms of the Brahmas. And then it is going into the four levels of the Arupa jhana, where Arupa Vachara Brahma realms are considered, where the infinite space, infinite consciousness, base of nothingness, and the neither perception nor non-perception. And they are the four realms of the immaterial Brahma realms. And the typical experience is included as seen, heard, sensed, and cognized. And there are certain beliefs among the people that they become one with some omniscient thing or omniscient power. So there are, it is called ekatta, or sometimes they call there's a kind of a diversity, so that is called nanatta. And in general, one consider everything, that is all, sabba. And interestingly, Nibbana is also included in this list. Now there are 24 lists, 24 concepts, and how these 24 concepts are being perceived by different category of people. So that is the sort of structure of this sutta. And Buddha is explaining how these 24 concepts are being perceived by different types of people. So we are now discussing the first category, that is the untaught ordinary person, putujjana, asutava putujjana. So there we have discussed how a person is perceiving the whole experience. Last time we have taken only one example where he is perceiving a chair, that is more or less represent the patavi dhatu, the earth element. We can consider the majority of the air is consisting of earth elements. Majority of the chair is consisting of earth element. Therefore, we can consider how a person perceives a chair. So we can sort of simplify the view. So we have the object, that is the chair, and then there is a person, that is the subject, and how he relate to this chair. So that is where the sort of interesting part happens here. So there are various likes and dislikes coming to the picture because of this relationship. So the typical level of recognition is the recognition that this is a chair. That is in a way not a wrong recognition, because if one see a chair, so immediately he can distinguish it from a table, it from another furniture, and he clearly recognizes this is a chair. Now, so that is in a way kind of a perverted view, because he don't know much about the very subtle aspects of this object, and he directly recognizes, perceives this as a chair according to his own preconceived ideas, his own perception. Now we typically tell it as a sanya vipallasa. So immediately when he considers this is a chair, he recognizes this is a chair. So if he was in search of a chair, then immediately there could be a sort of a delight, happiness arise in himself, because he was searching a chair and now he found the perfect match what he was searching, and there may be a sort of a delight arise in his mind. So the relationship is different where how he relate to this chair. So this person has a perverted view that there's a kind of a satisfaction, happiness can be taken, can be experienced through this chair, so he is delighted. And on the other hand, he considers it may last for a long time, and it is permanent, and I can have it, I can keep it under my control, I can own it, I can possess it. So likewise, he has the various relationships, he relate to this chair in many different ways. Now, if we consider something else, suppose we are getting to, now this person is very thirsty, and now he is going to a kind of a cafeteria, and there he found a fruit juice, suppose orange juice. Now once he ordered the orange juice, now he can see this orange juice. So he immediately recognized this as the orange juice. Now he has his own data bank, or whatever we call the database of previously perceived marks, signs, sanya, and now he can distinguish among many other types of drinks. Now this is the orange juice, so he can clearly recognize it. Not a bad thing. But he, since he was searching for a orange juice, now he was delighted by seeing it, and he want to have it, he want to drink it, he want to satisfy himself by this. So likewise, there are many second level thoughts arising in him because of this relationship, how he is related to this orange juice. Now Buddha says, why this kind of second level thoughts are arising, how this sort of proliferation happens in this mind. So why he is having a kind of a conceiving, so I want to have it, this is my orange juice, I can share it with my children, I can share with my friend. So likewise, we are including a self, we are including a person, I, to this whole experience, and we do sort of a conceiving. I related, a self-centered thinking is generated in this experience. Now, suppose we are getting to some other examples. Say, when one perceives about the Creator God, now we know there are many religions which believe a Creator God. Now they may have heard it, they have read it in a book, and their teachers might have told them. So there's a kind of a perception available in the mind. Suppose somehow they represent the Creator God using some symbol, or sometimes they say they can't represent the Creator God. So if they represent it using any kind of symbol, it's a kind of a defect. So likewise, there are many preconceived ideas, many beliefs, views, and accordingly, this typical person also has a kind of a belief. If there is a sign, he is supposed going to the prayers, temple or kovil or church or mosque or whatever it is. So once he go there, if he believes in a God, so they assume there's a statue, a kind of a representation of the God. Now once he see that, so immediately he recognizes, oh, this is the Creator God. So I am under his sympathy, mercy. So I am no one. So this is a kind of a relationship we are generating with the Creator God. So we think that we are simply creatures. We are very helpless. We are sinners. So likewise, we have many different views in ourselves depending on our upbringing and our various perceptions. And accordingly, we relate with the Creator God. And I-centered, there's a self-centered view. So all this conceiving happens under the root of I. There's an I-centered thinking is involved here. Now, if we consider some others, now even say someone is attaining jhana. Now, suppose he is fairly successful and he can stay several hours in a particular jhana, and it is very enjoyable, very blissful. And now probably he may be thinking about the next birth. How can I become a Brahman? How can I become a fairly radiant Brahman? So whatever it is, he may have learned from his own tradition, from his own religion, from his own teachers. So have a kind of a perception about the Brahman. And now he is doing his best to attain that Brahman realm, to reborn in that Brahman realm. So now he is perceiving that. So he thinks this is a really beautiful one, this is an eternal one, this is the ultimate bliss, this is the ultimate happiness. So likewise, he has his own ideas, and depending on that, so he thinks, I can become a Brahman. I should become a Brahman. I should practice to the best to become a Brahman. I should practice my best in order to be with the Brahman, to become one with the Brahman. So likewise, so depending on the beliefs, so one can relate with the Brahman. So if we get into the, say, even to the Arupa Brahman realms, it's a similar story, where one may attain various Arupa Jhana, and now he is practicing, mastering the Jhana, and as a result, he has some sort of a perception related to that Brahmas. So he knows that there is no Rupa, there is no material at all, so there is no any kind of typical material related suffering there. So only everything is extremely mental. So I can have a very blissful life for many eons. So he has a kind of a view. So this is the typical characteristics of a Brahman realm. So he is sort of, his ambition is to become such a Brahman. So now he thinks about that Brahman realm, say Akasa Ananchayatana. So he understands what is the Akasa Ananchayatana. He has his own views. So that is why he is practicing hard to attain to that Brahman realm. So likewise, it is not, I mean, so for some of us, these may appear like very distant, but there are many yogis, especially in the Brahmanism and Hinduism, so they are dedicate their whole life for this kind of an achievement. So they have their own perception related to the Brahman realms, and they think that is the ultimate, to become one with this Brahma, and as a result they practice. And actually, if we consider Buddha's life before his attainment or before his understanding, so he too went through various teachers, where the Alara Kalama, Uddakarama Putta, they both were masters in this Arupa realms. Alara Kalama, for example, he is a master in the third one, Akinchanyayatana. Uddakarama Putta is a master in Nevasanya Nasayachana, neither perception nor non-perception. So now these are not easy things, but they were very skillful, they were practicing hard, and they thought, so this is the ultimate, this is the best solution I can have for whole samsara. So this is the freedom of suffering, and they were trying their best to attain that level. And they have their own perception. And accordingly, they can even get reborn in that whole realm. So this is how they were relating to this Brahma realm. Now, if we get into something else, say if we see something, seen, the tongue. Suppose someone is traveling by bus or one's car or whatever vehicle, and at that time he sees someone. Assume that he's a young person and now he's in his prime age. Now he sees a beautiful girl. So at that time, what is the kind of a relationship happens in the mind? Now he recognizes this girl as a beautiful girl. Now that this is the typical mundane kind of recognition. So there's a kind of an attraction, there's a kind of a relationship now building up. Now he delights by this sight, and he want to talk with this girl, he want to have a relationship with this girl, and suppose maybe even to marry this girl, so whatever it is. And on the other hand, suppose another person see the same girl. Suppose he is now an old person and he is already married, have several children, and this girl is fairly closer to his own daughter. So another beautiful girl he sees. Now the relationship is entirely different. Maybe he appreciates her beauty and he might think she may be one of my daughter's friend. So likewise, complete, the relationship is going to be entirely different. And so probably he too may happy by seeing a daughter. So this is the kind of a relationship arising. So depending on this subject and the object, the relationship, so we can understand there's the many different levels of perceptions are arising. So this is how the person is perceiving the whole world. So when a mother sees a child, his own son, say for example. So maybe, suppose you are going to the college in order to pick your son from the after school, and now at that time you distinguish, clearly recognize, oh, this is my son. So after seeing him, so you were delighted. So you were quite happy. Son is safe, there was nothing has happened, he was not getting into any quarrel, he was patiently sort of studying, he was a sort of a bright student. So likewise, there are many relationships related to the son, and now you are sort of engulfed with many such views to the mind, and accordingly you recognize, accordingly maybe a kind of appreciation. On the other hand, if son has made up with any issues and the teacher now complains, now when you see the son, you get really upset, you get really disappointed why he couldn't behave well and all these things. Now the whole experience differs. Now, so there may be kind of resentment towards the son, or there may be kind of a desire towards the son, attachment towards the son. So many different kind of views can arise because of this relationship. Now, if we get into the other part, say, heard, sutta. Now you hear a beautiful song. Now probably you are a music lover, so you yourself have sung many different beautiful songs, and maybe this is one of your all own song now being broadcast by the radio. Now you clearly recognize, oh, this is my song, I sung this at this age, it's really beautiful, still it is beautiful, it is still, many are appreciating this song, so I could have done better. How about I am sort of making it much more better? So likewise, there are many different ideas now arising in your mind because you have a kind of a relationship with this song. Suppose there's another song which is sung by someone else, and you are in competition with that person at that time. And when this song is heard, probably you might even hate that song, because he's the one who might have cut yourself, and maybe had a kind of a competition. Probably he might have won, or you might have defeated. So whatever it is. So now even you probably even hate that song. You want to immediately go away from that song, and because you hate it. So likewise, there are different relationships arise even to the sound, even to what you are hearing. Now, when it is considered as sensed, that means by the nose, by the tongue and the body, how one is sensed. Mutta. So this sensed, say you are sort of walking by the road, and that time someone is giving you a kind of a lift. Now we are sitting on a very comfortable, very luxurious car. So while going through that, now you can have a relationship with that experience. You probably may be fantasizing, how about getting this kind of a car? How about getting a loan and buying the same type of car? Or even probably you might get in a kind of a jealousy. How this person have this much of money to have this car? Probably he might have done some kind of a cheating. That's how he was able to earn this much of money. So there are many different thoughts arising in the mind. Because what you have sensed, what you have experienced is really comfortable, really excellent, and you really love it, and you really delighted from that. But unfortunately, the mind is not stopped there. Mind further and further thinking about it, proliferating about it. And eye-centered thinking is erupting from there. And you maybe end up with kind of a dream about owning such car, and you are driving, and probably while you are in the dream, probably the other person, the driver, may be telling you, okay, you have reached the destination, because you are in a different world, a dream world. The whole that dream has started from that beautiful experience of that comfortable experience of the car. So likewise, if we consider this ditta, sutta, mutta, maybe even if we consider you are having a very delicious meal, even there you can relate with it. Only my wife can make this kind of a good meal. Only my children can have the capacities, the skill to prepare this kind of a meal. Or I want to have this meal. I want to sort of mention this to someone else, to my friend, to go to the same place, to go to the same hotel. So likewise, so depending on the taste what you have experienced, so you can relate to that experience, and accordingly you think. There's an eye-centered thinking related to this whole experience. Now, same situation to the mind. Now, when there are no any, it is, we can't say no, but when there are, say, minor seeing, hearing, sensing happens, probably there are thoughts coming to the mind. Maybe related to the past, or maybe something imaginary, maybe coming to the mind. And accordingly, you start to think. Suppose you are a student. Now there's a thought coming about higher education, going to the university. And after that, having a job and getting married, whatever it is. So those thoughts are coming to the mind, planning, dreaming, whatever it is. And then you get into that whole mind-made world and thinking, started to thinking. So this thinking can end up with a kind of an obsession even. Because too much thinking can lead to sort of an obsessive thinking, and you can't stop it now. Too much thinking. And sometimes it can get into a kind of a depression, because you are thinking about really kind of a pandemic, and everybody is now threatened, whole world is threatened, whole world in the sort of a turmoil, and many people are dying. So you are thinking. Ultimately, you can even become depressed. Because there is an eye to protect. There's a person to protect. I need to get protected. There are many others are dying. How can I get protected? So there's a disease being spread. So likewise, so we start to think. And too much thinking can lead to depression. So likewise, this thinking, how we relate to this outside world, and what are the thoughts popping up in the mind with respect to that outside world, with respect to the present situation, and how we relate with that. Are we able to handle it? Are we able to control it? Are we able to neglect it and come back to ourselves and come back to a kind of a positive thinking? Or are we become a sort of a victim of that negative thinking? So even the positive thinking can become sort of obsessive. So you are thinking about a really beautiful mansion. Now you are living in a really rented apartment, and now you are thinking of having a real beautiful condominium. Now you are planning. So it is beautiful, it's very expensive. There's many security plans. And you are getting a lawn and building it, and you are inviting your friends, having a great grand party, and many things you are thinking, proliferating. And ultimately, it is simply a dream, simply a plan, simply a fantasy. Now, likewise, when it comes to the thoughts, to the mind, so many such kind of thinking, eye-centered thinking, happens. So this is the typical world. And this is not something external, this is not something alien to us, but this is how we all are thinking. And if it gets to unity and diversity, that is where, say, Brahmanism, say they have the thought that there's a kind of a small self here, and if one attain to some extent spiritual development, then one can become united with the big self, ultimate self. So how one can become ekatta, united with this unity? So this is a kind of a perception available in one's mind. So I am not powerful by being alone, being a small self. How about I become that? How about I become that mighty God, mighty self? So likewise, we have a kind of a belief. So this is what we are being taught in the church or in the, say, in the Kovil or whatever it is. And accordingly, our thinking pattern is conditioned. And whenever we see a God's picture or statue, then we start to think. So there are a lot of faith arising, a lot of tears are coming. I want to become him, I want to become that, I want to united with that. So you even practice, you attain certain jhana, sort of a blissful experience happen. And now you are explaining it to someone else. I have attained to this kind of a very beautiful experience. I have become that. I was really united. There is nothing else. I was that. Still, I is there. I-centered thinking is there. So we are conceiving. We are basically manjana. It's a kind of a conceiving. So we have a kind of a belief. Our mind is trained or conditioned to think there is a sort of an almighty experience, extremely beautiful experience, and how about attaining that experience? And maybe luck by chance you are able to have a very blissful experience, and you relate it to that as that. You relate to that experience and that becoming that blissful experience as the unity with the Brahman, unity with that mighty self or big self. So this is how we are basically interpreting the whole experience. Then how about Nibbana? Now, is it someone else's Nibbana, or is it the same Nibbana that we are talking as Buddhists? Buddha has included Nibbana also to these 24 concepts. Now, this is where very challenging, how we relate Nibbana. So what is the perception we have about Nibbana? Are we thinking about it as kind of a world attained after the death? So sometimes in Sri Lanka, for example, whenever a person passed away, so we put a banner, may he attain Nibbana. So is it an attainment one can attain after the death? So can he attain Nibbana while, can't he attain Nibbana while living? Is Nibbana a beautiful experience? Is Nibbana a kind of a place where we all are reborn? And the previous Buddhas are there, all the previous Arahants are there, and we also are reborn to that Nibbana. So is this the idea we have? Or Nibbana is kind of a like Arupa realm. There is no Rupa, there is no material, but it's kind of a consciousness, perception, is there, so we become that. Is it the Nibbana that we are talking? Or is it kind of a complete extinction? There was a self, there was a person, and that person become no one. It's complete extinction. So is it the Nibbana? So we may have many different views about Nibbana. And we are reading many books, and we heard Nibbana is the ultimate bliss. That is the best happiness. So many different appreciation is there related to the Nibbana, and we aspire to attain Nibbana. So we wish everyone to attain Nibbana. It is so blissful, free from suffering and free from impermanent and its complete satisfaction is there. So may all beings attain Nibbana. So we wish. So we have a kind of a perception about the Nibbana. So that is also a perception. So our mind, from our young age, being conditioned about Nibbana. So this is Nibbana. We all as Buddhists, one day, have to attain Nibbana. So if we do some unwholesome activities, we can't attain Nibbana. So we have to protect Sila, we have to develop Samadhi, we have to develop Panya in order to attain Nibbana. So we have kind of a concept, kind of a view, something called Nibbana, and now we want to attain that Nibbana. Now this is how the typical mundane person thinking or imagining about Nibbana. Now this is not different from other concepts, the same story. This is still become a concept because he hasn't experienced Nibbana, but he has a kind of a projected view about Nibbana. He has heard from someone else. He has heard from many stories. He has heard maybe through suttas or jataka stories or whatever it is. And he therefore has his own view about Nibbana. And he want to attain that Nibbana. When someone is talking about some Dhamma sermon or delivering a Dhamma sermon or speaking about Nibbana, so he is now imagining, may I attain Nibbana? May I also experience that Nibbana? So likewise, many different views are arising in this person's mind with respect to Nibbana, related to Nibbana. And probably, sometimes, suppose he now practicing some meditation. At that time, everything happened fairly favorable way, and he was able to attain kind of a concentration. And probably, he can even misinterpret this blissful concentrated state as Nibbana. So I was practicing, and at that time I attained Nibbana. Now I am a Sotapanna. Now I am an Arahant because I experienced Nibbana. So one can relate like that. One can interpret that blissful experience as Nibbana. Because one has a kind of a projected view, kind of a perception, and while practicing, one's mind becomes really happy, blissful, and one can relate that blissful experience as Nibbana. So there could be such interpretations. And so one may even argue with someone else. So someone else say, no, it is not the Nibbana, it is simply a kind of a jhana, and this Nibbana is not a jhana, it is entirely different thing. You have to practice vipassana in order to attain jhana, attain Nibbana. You only have practiced samatha, therefore it cannot be Nibbana. So another person is arguing with us. Sort of he is trying to disprove our claim. Now we get into quarrel because I am confident that I attain Nibbana. Now I am an Arahant. So you are now arguing. Now many different quarrels, many different arguments can happen because we have a kind of a preconceived idea about Nibbana. Now this is the kind of realms of complexity. Now everything becomes really complex. So many books are available about Nibbana, so we read many books about Nibbana, so many perceptions, many ideas, many views. And another person now have the same situation. And there are many mismatching, so we can get into argument. He tell one Nibbana, another Nibbana. Theravadins tell one type of Nibbana, Mahayana, maybe people talking about another type of Nibbana. Vajrayana people may be telling another type of Nibbana. Or maybe they are talking about the same subject. Everyone says, even though our beliefs are different, ultimately we attain the same Nibbana. So many different complex views can arouse even among Buddhists about Nibbana. So this is the true story. We as human beings, we have our own kind of likes and dislikes, and we have heard many different sermons and read many books, and our own cultural inclinations are there, cultural attachments are there. Accordingly, we have our own Sri Lankan Nibbana. Maybe Indians may have their Indian Nibbana. Maybe Mahayana, maybe they have their own Nibbana. Maybe in US, they have American Nibbana. So, likewise, so we may be even to sort of include that kind of a nationalism. And we can even get into fight with Theravada Nibbana is the best Nibbana. Mahayana Nibbana is not the best one. It's an inferior Nibbana. You can't attain Nibbana by Mahayana practice. Only Theravadins can attain the proper Nibbana that Buddha has mentioned. So about Nibbana, we can have many different views, and we can even look down another person, or we can even put ourselves down and think that our one is wrong, so I am now changing my religion because someone else's Nibbana appears really beautiful, really blissful, much more beautiful than my Nibbana. So others are really marketing their Nibbana, so I am now giving up my poor Nibbana and now want to have that rich Nibbana. So likewise, as Buddhists, we have many views about Nibbana, and we can get into many arguments about Nibbana. So therefore, Buddha included Nibbana also to this list, because when one doesn't have proper understanding, when one doesn't have proper view, so one can have many different wrong views about Nibbana. So we can summarize therefore here, when it comes to a mundane person, a worldly kind of a what you call putujjana, ordinary unknown, untaught person. So his mind is confused, his mind is getting into many conceiving, eye-centered views, eye-centered thinking. As a result, he is not free from thinking, he is not free from conceiving, he's always proliferating, he's always in doubts, he's always in perplexities. And he is always arguing with someone, always thinking that my view is correct, others' views are wrong, my view is the best, others' views are inferior, others' views are wrong. So likewise, so depending on this kind of a situation, the whole world is entangled. Whole world is quarreling each other. Many different religions are fighting each other, looking down each other, because they think that my view is the best, someone else's view is bad, inferior. So this is the typical world view. So Buddha, taking 24 concepts, giving the sort of the overview of the whole many different kinds of view a typical worldly person may have. So we also may have this kind of many different views time to time. Because we are not arahants, so we also can get into many different views, and it can be included among any of these 24 concepts. And time to time, we are, say, in the morning you are thinking about your children, so you have that type of a view. And now we are getting to the job, and there, say, someone is challenging, someone has become sort of a threat to you. Now another type of view. And then, say, you are coming back home, now you have to go to the supermarket, now you have other types of view, you are seeing many different commodities, and you have many other views, and now you coming back home, you see your home, and you are delighted by seeing your home. This is my home, I want to go my home. So, and you come back home, and you are experiencing, say, happiness, and you are delighted by that happiness. Or sometimes you come back home and your children were get into a trouble, or they had a fight, and you have to sort of sort it out, and you really further become depressed, or your wife or husband has made up another sort of relationship, and you get into upset. So many different views in daily life, so we are experiencing. So this whole experience we can include, we can sort of analyze by considering these kind of an analysis, these kind of 24 concepts. And I mean, we can include our own experience fairly into this model, and accordingly we can analyze our own way of thinking. So I think this is enough for the typical ordinary person's view, and I now like to open the session for questions.
For any new friends who are joining us for the first time today, to ask a question, you may raise your hand and ask directly, or you may also send them to me via chat.
So, no one wants to have any view about what is heard. Maybe that's why no question. So any views from you, Jennifer?
Oh, all the time, Bhante. So, I mean, I guess, you know, with this practice, we are constantly living within our views and our own concepts of things. Is it enough just to recognize that they are just views and these are just all mentality? According to the practice, what do we do with these views?
Yeah, that's where the practice is coming to the picture. So we'll maybe touch that aspect on the next week's session, because there we can discuss the view, the perception about a seeker, a practitioner. They are typically, actually, if we can recognize whenever thought arising with respect to the object. Suppose someone is seeing a chair. Now if we consider the same chair here, so a practitioner may have a different view about that chair. So he has actually, before getting to this external objects, it is good if one can come back and experience one's own sort of experiences, or sort of observe one's own experiences in the light of the Buddha's teaching, in the light of the mindfulness. And there one may have a direct experience, one may have a direct sort of understanding about what is really going on. Say for example, you are able to recognize various characteristics of the earth element. So within the whole body, within our own body, there are various element characteristics, and one can recognize them. At one time it is rough, it is another time it is say stiff, another time it is cold, another time it is hot, another time it is movement, another time vibration. So likewise, there are many different kinds of physical experiences available, and we are recognizing them as physical experiences, not as my experience, but as a kind of a general, common kind of a physical experience. So more and more we train our mind to recognize that. So then we may probably get the understanding that this body is nothing but these element characteristics, a kind of a manifestation of four elements. Even though I call it as my body, it is actually kind of a physical body, and it has many different characteristics, many different behaviors, even though I have put it a label. I have put a label as a name was given, but that is only for a mere communication, easy communication with others, just to distinguish with the others. But if we properly analyze, properly understand, this is a kind of a representation or manifestation of four elements, and we call it I, we call it a person, we call it a man, we call it a woman. So if we can recognize like that, understand like that, then the whole experience become different. Rather than we personally recognize with this experience, or we personally identify with this experience, we can sort of distinguish experience from these four elements. Now we have a kind of a detached relationship. Rather than a close, bound experience, now we have a detached experience. Sort of a someone else's experience. You can look at your own body as someone else. Or you can look at the whole physical experience as someone else. Someone else's experience. What we call as parato. Where you are observing the whole many different kinds of element characteristics, but you are quite detached. You are not no more going to claim it as mine. No more going to claim it as I. You recognize there are various causes and conditions. As a result, these many different element characteristics are coming to the fruition, coming to the picture. And now you can recognize them as truly, as they truly are. Now, more and more one is developing such wisdom, then the detachment going to happen. Now you have a dispassion towards this whole system, and you look at the body as kind of a factory, as a kind of a series of processes, and not only that, you can inferentially understand the other's bodies or someone else's body is also the same thing. And even the whole outside physical world is the same thing. The whole manifestation of four elements. Internal four elements and external four elements are merely the four elements. Now your view, the entirely going to be different. That becomes a kind of a correct view, because now you are not claiming, you are not sort of giving much emphasis to your own part, your own bodily experience. Rather, you now have a kind of a global view, universal view, where the whole physical realm is nothing but four elements, manifestation of four elements. So this is where we are able to penetrate the self view. We are able to slowly dilute the self view. Initially, during the beginning of our practice, still we consider that I am practicing. I am doing element meditation. I am doing vipassana. Or I am doing dhatu manasikara. So likewise, we may still have the self-view. But as a result of the practice, this self-view is threatened. This self-view is penetrated. This self-view is diluted, thinned. And we are able to have a elements view that is much more advanced than this ignorant self-view. And now we are seeing things as they truly are. And there could be a much more relaxed relationship with the whole world now. Rather than you trying to sort of get into arguments or to quarrel with others, or to claim that you are the best, or this is my best body, beautiful body, others are ugly, bad, likewise. So you can have a kind of a much more cordial relationship with others, more humane relationship with others. So the whole view going to be changed. So likewise, the practice is leading us a different level, so that we can have a, in a way, a kind of an innocent view. Non-quarrelling, non-arguing, non-conflicting view with the others. And we are not now looking down someone else's view and sort of, and but rather we can be friendly with someone else, can cope up with some another situation. So likewise, the whole experience, whole our, how we relate to this whole world is going to change. Anyway, we'll discuss this in further when you are coming to the training, that is to the second.
Okay, thank you, Bente. Looks like we have quite a few hands raised, and also I've received quite a few questions as well. Chitra Devi, sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, can you unmute yourself and ask your question?
So, Bente, this is This is a gradual process, isn't it? And does it develop not only by the practice, but also self-investigation, Bhante?
Of course. Actually, self-investigation itself is a practice. Vipassana, we can say, as a self-investigation. Yes.
So, should we be all the time looking closely into when we have interactions with people? Do we have to analyze it and see where we went wrong, or are we doing it correctly, or should we be more analytic in the daily life?
Analytic in the sense, not get into the too much thinking, but rather we have to be introvert and looking at what is happening in the mind. Say, for example, when it comes to Chittanupassana, suppose if we take the same example, say this person is looking at a chair. Now he was in search of a chair and this chair is really satisfactory. Now he has an attachment towards the chair. Now in the practice level, we can see the attachment, we can see the desire, the greed. Instead of sort of looking at the chair and sort of owning, possessing and all these things, you can see what has happened in the mind, what is the desire aroused in the mind. So the desire is penetrated, desire is went through, and that is how actually we have to sort of relate with the whole experience. So day-to-day life, we are dealing with many people and many other experiences. And then and there, if we are vigilant about our mind, then we can understand what are the sort of changes happen in the mind because of this relationship, because of this association. Yeah.
So it is really looking at our own minds and trying to see whether it's wholesome or unwholesome, and working on those.
Yeah, actually, one level is to recognize whether it is wholesome or unwholesome, and to promote wholesome and to remove unwholesome. But when it comes to vipassana, wholesome and unwholesome have the same level. That is, wholesome thought is a thought. Unwholesome is also a thought, where they have the nature to arise and nature to pass away. So we see these common characteristics, universal characteristics, and they have the nature to come and go. They have the nature to arise and pass away. They are quite transient, impermanent. And likewise, so we actually have to go beyond wholesome and unwholesome when it comes to the real practice.
Okay, thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Hey, Bhante, the next question. Conceiving or manana is possible as long as self-view is strong. When self-view decreases, would the frequency of manana be less? And until total eradication of self-view, we will still continue conceiving. Is this correct?
Exactly. Very correct. So more we practice, the self-view become less and less. So the frequency of generating conceiving, or frequency of thoughts, eye-centered thoughts, become less and less. More we practice, so that is how actually we can evaluate our practice. So suppose 5 years ago, you are having many self-view, much self-view, strong self-view, and you are thinking always to possess many things, how to highlight myself, how to become the first, how to become the best, how to always come to the picture, how to highlight oneself, show off, and many, many things. You are doing marketing yourself and a lot of things, advertising yourself. But later with the practice, you understand the futility here. And you understand the futile nature here. You understand I'm trying to prove where there is nothing, where there is no one. So we are trying to impose a self. We are trying to sort of project a self where there is really no self. So likewise, the practice is taking us to more humility, and then we can recognize then and there how ignorance is creating this self. it is not that constant arising of self now, or constant arising of many different self views now, rather time to time, here and there, the arising of self view. And there you can clearly recognize the futile nature. You clearly recognize the ignorant way of thinking. Actually, we have to go really deeper to the practice to understand the mind. And more we have the clarity of mind, we can recognize these different thoughts. How many different thoughts are arising and trying to sort of pretend as a self. How to strengthen the self, reinforcing the self. And once we recognize that, and then we can understand it's really an ignorant thing. It's a kind of a foolish thing to do. Because whenever this self-view arises, definitely there is a kind of an unsatisfaction also arise, kind of a suffering arise, kind of a stress arise. Because this I, this self, has to be protected. This self, this I, can be threatened by someone else. So this I, this self, going to be reborn. So likewise, so there are many uncertainties, there are many unsatisfactory thinking, kind of a, we become like burdened. All these things are evident when the self-view is there. So one will understand how this is causing suffering. So the mind was free from suffering so far. Whenever this self-view is arising, again it is suffering. Again there is a burden. Again there is a sort of a trap. Again there is a sort of a stuck in a view. So you may recognize how gross it is, how gross this experience is. In order to see that, actually one has to have a fair amount of freedom of mind. A quality of a free mind has to be experienced. Comparatively, now you can analyze sort of experience when the mind having a self-view, when the mind has trying to prove a self, then you can understand the suffering, unsatisfactoriness, stress, tension involved there. As a result, one can slowly eliminate that. One can slowly sort of thin that wrong thinking. Ultimately, as you have mentioned, the Arahant is the one who is completely free from manjana, completely free from conceiving.
Thank you, Bhante. Can I ask the next person who raised their hand, the iPhone, Ravi Karu? Sorry. Could you unmute yourself and ask your question, please?
Ravi Karunaratna.
Yeah. Hi, Bhante.
Yes.
Yes. Hi, Major. Thank you very much. Bhante, thank you for the Dhamma instruction. It's wonderful. Bhante, the one thing I was thinking with reference to Ditti, the very first thing in the Noble Eightfold Path is Samma Ditti, which is the right view. So although there can be very many views, including Sakkaya Ditti, which is the first in the Dasa Sanyojana, it is, isn't Samma Ditti, right view, the most important?
Sure.
In our,
yeah.
Path to enlightenment?
Sure, sure.
Not that I am in the but
yeah.
Isn't that the first step that we should to take, Bhante?
Yeah, actually that is where the Buddha is also mentioning. The Sammaditti is quite relevant and Sammaditti is quite important. And so Sammaditti has many different facets. So basically Sammaditti says basically two aspects, the mundane type of Sammaditti and the supramundane type of Sammaditti. So therefore, even though we understand there are many confused views are available, in order to penetrate, in order to have the correct view, so that is also a kind of a gradual path. Not one can immediately have the best view, but rather it's a kind of a gradual refinement to the view is happening. So Buddha is coming up with the mundane view first, where one believes about the karma, what we call as kammasakata sammaditti, where still kind of a self-view is there, still kind of a ignorance is there, because Buddha says it is sasava punya bhagya upadi vepakka. That is the mundane sammaditti still have the what you call the defilements, still have the self view. But one is now becoming a good person. One is now trying to give up unwholesome deeds and try to develop wholesomeness. So he has become a good person now. One become a kalyana putujjana. And then only one may get into the practice and to further develop one's understanding. And there one can get into the supramundane sammaditti, lokuttara sammaditti, that way Buddha mentioned, that is lokuttara magganga. Anasava lokuttara magganga. It doesn't have the fetters, it doesn't promote the self-view, and it is becoming a path factor. So likewise, the sammaditti has to be developed gradually, and this proper understanding, proper view is going to be refined. You cannot have kind of a fixed view. Rather, with the practice, the samadhiti is going to evolve. Now, say for example, we discussed today about Nibbana. So you are starting your practice with some perception about Nibbana. But after 1 year's practice, that perception about Nibbana has changed. And you practice another 1 year. The perception about Nibbana again has refined. You practice another year, your perception about Nibbana further has refined. So likewise, so the proper view, right view, also is refined, and that is how ultimately we are sort of getting to the, say, supramundane view, where sort of the freedom of mind, we are not holding to any view. Even to the right view, we are not claiming as, this is my view, this is the best view. So likewise, the more and more one's mind become free, mind become unattached, non-grasping, so one is ready to give up all views. So this is how the sort of, in say for example, in Kacchanagotta Sutta, Buddha very beautifully explains about fairly advanced kind of sammaditti. One, say everything exists is one view, everything does not exist is another view, and Buddha is giving a kind of a middle discourse with the cause and effect. So likewise, there are many beautiful, proper views, correct views are explained. It's a kind of a gradual development.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. The next question is, for example, Bhante, if we have a sickness, do you then look at the sickness as a sickness which we would view as a sickness that happens outside of what we call the self, as opposed to why is the sickness happening to me, this pain is affecting me, how do I get better from the sickness, etc., like the general thoughts we have? Hope this makes sense. Much merit, Bhante.
Yeah, you are correct. So that is where Buddha is telling, are we able to limit the physical sickness to the physical sickness without adding the mental part to that, without putting a mental sickness to it? Are we able to look at physical sickness as physical sickness? I mean, it is easy to say than doing. Now, whenever we get sick, we immediately get a kind of a depressive thought, why it is happening to me? I mean, all others are healthy, I am pretty poor, my immunity is less. And nowadays you can get into this kind of a view. But if possible to have, I mean, this body is subjected to illness and this body is now sick. Now it does not mean that you keep it aside and you allow it to die. You have to find the proper solution. You have to meet a doctor. You have to got the proper medicine. But still you are not trying to make a self out of it. You are not trying to make an individual light out of it, but you recognize sickness as sickness. So what you are telling is true, correct. So we have to again and again try to live according to that, because Buddha says, when someone actually came to the Buddha and he is telling that, Bhante, this body is really weak now, very old, has come to the last ages. So every day it is subject to various sicknesses, illnesses. So, and Buddha really says, yes, that is very true. This, if someone is telling this body is free from illnesses, that is because of his ignorance. This body is constantly subjected to various illnesses. But the important thing is to not to have any mental sickness or not to have any mental stress because of this sickness. So Buddha encourages to have such kind of a mature way of living when even the body is sick, how to have a healthy mind. Back to you, Jennifer.
Thank you, Bente. And the next question I received is from Achini, and I also see that you have your hand raised. Would you like to ask your question directly?
Yes, please, Jennifer. Thank you for the opportunity, Bante.
Yeah.
My question is about the concept of self, and I think it's very easy to understand with Rupa, in Nama Rupa, that it's, I mean, there's no self. But when it comes to vijnana, when we hear things like Buddha try to understand truth for Sara Sangha Kalpa Lakshya so many years, and something was continuing, right? There was a continuation of his mind, his vijnana, and then even for us, we are supposed to, nurture our vijnana, and then people talk about the next birth. And going all the way to see Maitri Buddha. So there seems to be something that's continuing, something that's integral to me or myself. I'm struggling with understanding this and kind of letting go of my attachment to that concept as well.
Yeah.
Please explain.
Yeah, so that is how Buddha is talking about the five aggregates. So this whole experience he is analyzing into five aggregates. So the first aggregate, as you mentioned, is the rupa, the material aggregate. And the mental part consisting of four aggregates, various perceptions, various feelings, and the mental constructs, formations, and the consciousness. Consciousness, if we consider the consciousness is something permanent, sort of a soul, then we are getting to a wrong view. Now, consciousness, Buddha very clearly mentioned, now when we see something, then according to the eye consciousness arise. There was no eye consciousness, but due to causes, eye consciousness arise. There was no ear consciousness, but when the sound and ear meets, then the ear consciousness arise. So the consciousness also is conditioned. Consciousness also is a causal reaction. And there was no nose consciousness. When the nose and the smell contact, then the nose consciousness arises. And the taste and tongue conditions the tongue consciousness. The body and the tactile sensations conditions the body consciousness. And similarly, mind and mind objects conditions the mind consciousness. Similarly, therefore, we need to understand consciousness is also not kind of an eternal something that is going one life to the other, but rather consciousness is also extremely conditioned phenomena, causal phenomena, and it is arising and passing away. It is quickly arising and passing away, but this quick succession we can't recognize. Suppose when there is fire being connected to a rope, say we are taking some long rope, and the end of the rope we ignite, and now there's a little fire there, and now we start to rotate it. Now from the outside it may appear like a circle, a circular ring of fire, but actually there is no ring, but because of the speed we perceive it as a ring. Similarly, our consciousness is also extremely speedy. Very rapidly it is arising and passing away, but therefore, as a result, we perceive it as a kind of a continuous consciousness. But what is available is a kind of a very quick, rapid arising and passing away nature, which we are unable to recognize. And on the other hand, if we are to answer how we are continuing, so there are actually sometimes Buddha say, is not the same person, it is not the different person. I mean, you can't recognize, you can't give a yes and no answer here. There are kind of a continuation is there, kind of a sort of habits being transferred, but there is no kind of an eternal soul being continuing or experiencing all the samsara, but kind of a certain the previous consciousness conditions the new consciousness, the present consciousness. The present consciousness conditions the next consciousness. So likewise, it's a kind of a causal chain reaction is there.
Bhante,
Bhante
refers to this as a stream of consciousness, and that helped me understand better.
Sure.
It's going like a stream of consciousness.
Yeah, that's what I also mentioned. It's a kind of a stream,
a
series.
Not unchanging, but a changing consciousness going from left to right.
Yeah, changing. It's very momentary.
Yes.
Say, for example, say, while you are hearing, you have the ear consciousness. Ear consciousness is also, it is not just a one single ear consciousness. Suppose there are 1,000 ear consciousnesses arising and passing away in quick succession. And now suppose you stop hearing and now you start to see. Then a series of eye consciousness arising and passing away. Now suppose you stop seeing. Now you started to taste. Now the series of tongue consciousness arise and pass away. So now when all these six types of consciousness happens in quick succession, so we are very unable to recognize it. We simply see a kind of a single consciousness because of our wrong understanding, because of its rapid succession. So we are unable to see this reality. So therefore it's quite correct to mention it as a series of consciousness or stream of consciousness.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Bhante, just a quick follow-up. Is it okay?
Sure.
What would you say happens the moment person passes away? Would you say similarly that last consciousness conditions the next consciousness?
Yeah, we have to say like that. So there, Buddha says in many suttas, where the kamma, and there are many causes condition the next birth, kamma, craving, and the consciousness. So kamma actually makes the kind of a potential for the next birth, and this person has craving. He hasn't completely sort of ceased the craving. So therefore, it's always searching for a next birth, or searching, lingering, or sort of expecting a new kind of an experience, always expecting another beautiful experience. So the tanha is there, craving is there, and consciousness appear like a seed. Vinyanam kettang kammang bijang, kammang kettang vinyanam bijang tanha sineho. That is how Dhamma explains. So vinyana is the seed, kamma appear as the field, and the tanha appear like the moisture, as the rain. So when these conditions are satisfied, another birth can happen. Now, assume if one eradicate tanha, completely uproot tanha, then that essential condition, essential cause is no more available. Then another future birth cannot happen. So unless we have tanha, unless we have craving, and of course attached is the ignorance, so when the tanha and ignorance are, avijja is present, future birth is inevitable.
Thank you, Bhante.
Bhante, I know we are over time, but we still have 3 more questions.
I am fine with it for 5-10 minutes.
Okay. So the next question, Kumudini, can you please unmute yourself?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
My question is, now we are made of elements and so is the outside world. How do you differentiate the animate and the inanimate?
Yeah, that is...
Because there is a difference.
Sure, sure. That is where, I mean, the... So when it comes to the elements view, that is where in Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, Buddha talks about six elements. The four elements plus the space element and ultimately the consciousness element. So, I mean, the four elements only represents the physical world. When it comes to the animate things, additionally, they have the consciousness element as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. All right.
So you can refer our Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta explanation. That is beautifully Buddha explains about the consciousness element and what are the functions of it. So likewise, a good explanation is there in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. We covered that some time back. Probably you can get the previous Sutta teachings and refer that.
And even this today's talk, Bhante, I missed most of it because there was a time change in USA and I forgot it.
I see.
Last time also there was some mix-up because my husband is not well. I can't always get to this on time.
But
so,
anyway, the recordings are available in the website. So probably Jennifer can share the link or I can give you the link. So you can listen to this.
She has shared it with me, but I don't get your notes like you depict on this here right now with the man and the chair and all that.
Yes.
That I can't see.
No,
only listen to your Dhamma talk.
No, I mean in the Nisarnavani website, it is available. I don't know.
I see, okay.
So if
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, if you get into, I don't know from where you got the sort of the information... Nisarana website, I have included everything. Probably I can share it to you again.
Yes. Jennifer also has forwarded it, but it was working for some time. Now it's not.
Really?
So,
I see.
Yes. I don't know why. She has been very kind.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, sure. So.
Yes, I can follow up, Kumudini, with the link again. I just checked it, but it's okay. I can follow up with you separately.
Thank you.
So I am now sending the link to everyone in the chat. Probably you all can refer Sutta teachings using the same that link.
Okay. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. Welcome. And again, we are conducting a virtual retreat these days. If you are in the same time category, you can join with that as well. At 1 p.m. we have the question and answer session, and 4:30 p.m. we have the Dhamma sermon. In Sinhala, by the way.
Thank you, Dante.
Yeah.
So, Dashika, would you like to unmute yourself and ask your question?
Thank you, Bhante. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
This is regarding my practice. Is it all right?
Yeah, fine.
So I do a walking and seated meditation. In the past few days, after listening to the question that Dhamma talked, my name, I'm Samadbhai. So, going on to the walking meditation, I used to go into the empty space, I think that I'm in, my samadhi is good, so I don't get much mental, so I observe my mind carefully. So I feel like I'm going, walking like a puppet, and I ask in Nagadima. Recently, what has happened is, I was walking my mind. Now, there is like a commentary going, I'm not thinking, but there's a inner commentary going for each thing I experience. Like if I feel hotness, then I think it's a dhatua. It's one of the elements. Then after a little while, it goes to another place, or like the coolness. Then it says, I change. Adam Ekabenasuna is changing the coldness. Then if I get a pain, then it says, okay, now it's the pain that you're experiencing. So you see that it is changing. Like the inner talk, it's like I'm comparing all the knowledge with the experience.
Yeah.
So once I heard that it shouldn't be like that, I shouldn't be like doing what I learned. But this is, I'm experiencing, and this because I have a listened to this for, I don't know, this is a recent change. So this is okay, so I'm just ignoring, but it keeps on saying, you can see now it is not yourself, that you are not having any no atme.
Actually this is where the book knowledge coming to the front. So when we have a lot of knowledge heard, and some book knowledge is there, so we start to map our experience immediately with that book knowledge. And this is something happens to us, mostly to the educated people, and this is a hindrance. This is something we need to stop. And we need to stop because, I mean, you need to purposely ignore that and don't appreciate it. You simply have a stern, stern, strong comment to yourself. Don't do it. I just want to be with the simple, very beginner's mind. I don't need any kind of a book knowledge, borrowed knowledge. I am just having a kind of a child nature, where you are experiencing things like a child, like someone who doesn't know anything, like a beginner. Then only you can have the direct touch. So therefore, don't go to give any names or mapping to the book knowledge, book or anything. Recognize this also as a distraction, because the insights are possible only when mind is quiet.
Your mind is quiet, Dante, but yeah, this is a recent onset. I was nicely doing it, I was just following, Amalat helped me as well. But this is in the last few sessions, which I listened to this, your sermon, because that is like telling me things. Yeah, so I should ignore that.
Yes, definitely. You bet. Need to. Yeah. I mean, if it is happening naturally and it is not going too far, fine. I mean, this is kind of a insights also happen like that. Say the mind is fairly quiet and we are observing various things. Inner chatter is quiet, and immediately there are certain insights arising with a very short sort of a thought. And after that, rather than sort of constructing it on top of that, rather than adding to that, adding or bringing our book knowledge onto that, we need to quiet it down. Again, calm down. Again, you come back to the previous way of calm observation, quiet observation. And again, kind of a much stronger insight is possible after that sometimes. But if we once the first insight arise, okay, this is kind of impermanent. There's a little thought arising. Now, if you are trying to map it to a book telling, okay, this in this sutta it is telling impermanent, in that sutta it is telling impermanent. So this is body also impermanent, Vedana is also impermanent. So likewise, if you start to proliferate on that, then you are confusing the thing.
It's just telling me. That's impermanent, and then there is no self. But previously it didn't come like that. I was just observing normally. Yes. So if I say hipana, and get rid of that. Is it all right?
Yeah, fine. Whatever technique in order to calm down the mind, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay, you are welcome. So I think now we can wind up the session. We have hope, Jennifer, you don't have any other questions received through the chat.
Bhante, there's only one last question.
Uh-huh. Is it related to today's teaching?
Yes, it's asking to explain whether today's teaching, what you explained, Bhante, is the first step towards overcoming Sakkaya Ditti.
Actually, in order to overcome Sakkaya Ditti, there are many teachings by the Buddha, and Mula Pariyaya Sutta giving an overview of the whole experience. I mean, that's why it is called Mula Pariyaya, the giving a complete understanding, complete root of everything. So these suttas actually helped us to unentangle our whole entanglements. We are in a kind of a confusion, and when Buddha is clearly telling us in many different ways how we got stuck, how we got entangled, so there we can apply our understanding and try to unentangle it, how to simplify the whole thing. So therefore, I mean, we can't say this is the only sutta or this is kind of the first step to remove Sakkaya Ditti. This alone is not enough. I mean, whatever we discuss today is not enough. So you need to really get into practice. You have to develop Satipatthana. And that may be possible to further enhance your understanding. So this is also part and parcel of it. I mean, that is where Buddha is talking about five supports. So you need to be supported by Sila, Sila Anugahita, that is the morality. And you need to support by the sutta, that is what we do now, through the heard, through the knowledge from the Buddha's teaching. And then we need to do a discussion in order to clarify certain doubts, that is the sakaccha anugahita. And we need to practice samatha and vipassana, concentration and the wisdom practice. So all these five supports are needed in order to have a proper understanding. Okay, then we'll conclude today's sutta teaching session. So we were here discussing for about 1.5 hours, and we were able to accumulate a lot of merits. So we'll share all these merits with the passed away beings, our passed away relatives, and all the beings in the world. So we'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatam punya sampadam. Sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatam punya sampadam. Sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatam punya sampadam. Sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha cha bummattha deva naga mahiddika. Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha cha bummattha deva naga mahiddika. Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattha cha bummattha deva naga mahiddika. Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparang. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.